Now I face out, I hold out, I return to the truth of my life, seeking the seas on the whole moment to now break away. Oh God, let me out, can you let me out, can you set me free from being stuck in the world, save me the last bit in the
Welcome to another episode of the Social Link Video Game Podcast. This is episode 12. This is Alex.
This is Anthony.
I decided to kind of like do a very kind of nightcap kind of version of my voice today because, of course, you fucking woke me up at like 9 o'clock in the goddamn morning to do the podcast when I told you it's supposed to be recording at 10. You're a dick.
I know. Well, here's the thing, as people may know, there's a time difference. So I should know better that Alex was talking about 10 his time, not 10 my time.
God
so.
Damn it. I was like, I got a text message from Anthony saying, I'm about to get ready right now, like 8:58 in the goddamn morning. While I stayed up till like 2 in the morning actually playing video games.
Oh, wow. You're all prepared for the podcast then, at least.
Yeah, no shit. So, you know, it's also, it's Easter today. We are recording on April 20th. Happy 420 to everybody there who indulge in that sort of activity.
Well, that's very rampant in my state.
Well, it's pretty rampant in California, too. Remember, California can, like, eat Colorado.
Yeah.
In a hole, pretty much. So how have you been doing, man?
Doing pretty good. Just real quick, before I go into that, happy Easter to everyone.
Yep. Happy Easter.
It's a formality. Today is just because I'm very non-religious, as you are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't observe Easter really, so there mm-hmm. you go.
And there's this meme that's going around saying that Easter was actually based on the fertility god Ishtar. Have you seen
yes.
that? Yeah.
Yes, that a lot of look. It's not just Easter though. People got to realize a lot of the holidays are based off of Celtic holidays. You know, winter solstice, i.e., Christmas. You know,
mm-hmm.
The fall solstice, i.e., Halloween. Most holidays originate from Celtic, however you want to say it.
Celtic
traditions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I knew that, but or you know, pagan religions and pagan holidays and stuff, mm-hmm. but it doesn't matter. It's Easter. There are bunnies running around all over the place. There are Easter eggs to find in Disneyland. There are Easter eggs that you can find, and you get an Easter egg of your own if you find them all.
Nice.
Which is pretty awesome. But it's like $5.
Oh.
Not free.
Not free. Buck.
Nope. I'm just wondering, like, if Haunted Mansion has one. I know that the fountain outside of Haunted Mansion has one. It's a huge egg. It's not something that you're supposed to take. It's just something, they give you, like, a map, and then there's, like, stickers, and then you put the stickers where you find each egg from, you know?
So it's not a, of course you can't really compete with thousands of people that visit Disneyland, obviously. Well, so it's kind of,
yeah, well, you are competing to get specific eggs, like at the end of the day and stuff. Once you find all the eggs in the theme park that you're at, you basically redeem them at City Hall or something like that, and then they give you like an egg of your choice, because it's usually like this, you know, like an egg with, you know, Mickey Mouse or Donald or some other Disney character, which is kind of neat. For $5, it's not bad.
Indeed.
You know.
Yeah, that sounds like fun, an Easter egg hunt. You know what that kind of reminds me of for some reason?
What?
Of a video game.
Oh.
That Disneyland Video NES game, remember that? That NES game?
Yes, I was actually talking to somebody at Disneyland last weekend about that game. It is Adventures in a Magic Kingdom by Capcom.
Yep. It was a fairly decent game.
Mm-hmm. It's pretty decent, but some of it's kind of silly. Like in Haunted Mansion, you can only have like 3 candles, and that's your kind of ammo or weaponry and stuff. And it's kind of like, okay, how useful this can be.
It has some odd. I remember the game. The thing with the game that I remember was it had like mini games or full. Game mini games. Like, I remember the Space Mountain level was fucking stupid. I hated Space Mountain in that game. Not the real Space Mountain, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
but I hated the Space Mountain game.
Yeah, and I don't remember a lot of the mini games and stuff, but it's like, you know, like Big Thunder Mountain was there too. I was like, well, okay. Basically, they hit on like a lot of the good rides and stuff, and I was kind of happy with that.
Yeah.
I mean, though they were dumb.
Yeah, they were dumb. Yeah. I remember that game. I used to rent it back in the day. Remember renting?
Yes. Oh, wow. That's one thing that's interesting, because there was a game that never came out in the United States called Ranma Super Battle, and it was a fighting game for the SNES, and it's funny because it was fully voiceovered and everything. It might have been a beta or some sort, but I can't find a place on the internet that actually has the ROM or detail about this game ever being released in the United States, which is very interesting.
Yeah. I know you're a big Ranma fan, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, I played Ranma Hard Battle, which was the one that came before it, and then Ranma Super Battle came after, which is a lot more Street Fighter-y than Ranma Hard Battle. So I was, like, really looking forward to kind of playing it again, you know, at one point in my life, when I was into emulation, which we're going to be talking about today, actually.
Emulation.
Yep, and I couldn't find it. Like, nobody, like, everybody just keeps claiming that it never came out to the United States. I'm like, no, I swear to God. Like, I freaking played it on, you know, my Super Nintendo, and I rented it from the local, you know, like, rental shop. And I was like, and I was so confused. I was like, no, they released an American version. I swear it. He even had American voices.
I think you might be right. I remember reading something about it in EGM, Electronic Gaming Monthly.
Well, what a lot of people were claiming is that it was planned to be released, but it never came out.
Hmm.
Yeah. That's why I'm so confused. I'm like, but it did come out. I played it.
Yeah. Those days were weird. Well, you know what, though? Let's talk about that. Let's talk about that during the emulation thing, because that'll be interesting.
Yeah, sure. I mean, we can definitely do that. You just have to remind me.
Yeah, I'm sure it'll be brought up, because there's a lot of games that need to be brought up, because just a little bit forward, I'm going to jump ahead real quick, if you don't mind, okay?
Sure.
I usually do a rant. I called it a rant because I didn't know what else to call it, but it's really just me talking about emulation. About 7 minutes of me talking about emulation.
It sounds like a rant to me.
Well, a rant is usually me berating an idea or something like that. Mm-hmm. And I really don't berate it because I look at it from two angles.
Right.
Instead of my angle, which I normally do, as you know. So, it's an interesting thing, and it's an important conversation to have, I think. Yeah. Emulation is a topic that I think needs to be discussed. It's one of the more controversial topics, but I digress. We'll talk about that later. So, So there you go. There you go. Preview of things to come, Alex.
Yes, indeed.
Indeed, indeed. So let's talk about something else for a second. You said you're up till 2 a.m. So what were you playing at 2 a.m? Let's start.
I don't know if I stayed up till 2 a.m. playing video games, I should probably ask you first, because chances are you probably haven't played a lot over the past couple of weeks or so, right?
I have actually, the last couple days, this is going to be interesting, because this is funny. I have not played anything heavy since I beat Final Fantasy X. So by heavy, I haven't even started X-2 or another RPG or crazy, something like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
However, I have been playing what I have been playing, and there's two key games that I've played, and one of these games, what was interesting was I found out about another port of this game later on. Last weekend, I don't know what it was, but I think I was on a Facebook group that I'm a moderator on. I won't mention what it is, but talking about Sega games, and I went into my PS3 collection and dug out the Sonic Ultimate Sega Genesis collection. Which I think is one of the best compilations ever made.
Okay.
I think it's a compilation, great compilation. I think if you really want a Sega fix, you buy that, and that saves you a lot of money from buying a lot of these games being re-released on Virtual Console, etc., etc. You really just need that collection for a lot of these games. And it's an amazing collection because it has all 4 Phantasy Stars, although one is unlockable. And it's very easy to get unlock one. It's so stupid what the requirement is. I'll tell you what it is. You have to beat the first boss of Sonic the Hedgehog 2 with two players.
With two players?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then you unlock the Sega Master Phantasy Star.
Very interesting.
Yeah. Eh. And then there's a bunch of unlockable stuff. And I mean, it's a pretty cool collection. It has over like 48 games on it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of, you know, it has the key Genesis RPGs, you know, Sword of Vermillion, the Shining games, the Phantasy Stars, etc. It has the Sonic games, Sonic 1 through 3, Sonic and Knuckles. It doesn't have the Sonic and Knuckles 3, which I heard when you plug in Sonic 3, that's kind of a different thing.
Mm-hmm.
It has, you know, Vector Man, etc., you know, has all that shit. But it has one game that's unlockable, and this one is kind of a pain in the ass to get, and that's Space Harrier, and that's one of the games I've been playing.
Okay.
A lot of. So what ended up happening was I was playing a lot of Space Harrier, and I was doing some research on the Wikipedia article and that type of thing, and I found out that its sequel was called Space Harrier 3D, which is not really a sequel, it's the Sega Master System port, okay, that I later discovered.
Interesting.
But here's what I ended up doing. This is hilarious. Looking up Space Harrier 3D, I found out, to my joy, that there was a port of it released to the Nintendo 3DS back in December of 2012.
Mm-hmm.
So I went and bought it.
Okay.
And while I love playing it on a big screen, there's a novelty to that on the Sega Genesis. I have played many a port of Space Harrier. I even looked at videos of ports of Space Harrier. And aside from the arcade one, I will say the 3DS port is the best.
Okay.
So, what does that mean? Well, one, that means I'll never have to touch Shenmue ever again, which is fine by me. Which is the only reason I ever played Shenmue, as you know.
Mm-hmm.
And two, it's a cool port in a number of ways. This is a game that really is enhanced by the 3D element of the 3DS.
Okay.
Okay. It's very much like the very similar Sonic the Hedgehog 3D that we got.
Mm-hmm.
Because the Sega games, older Sega arcade games, did this technique, and you could probably explain it better than me, with their graphics where they're kind of like placed on different backgrounds or something.
Mm-hmm.
You explained it to me when I was talking about Sonic the Hedgehog.
Yeah.
Can you explain that again?
Parallax scrolling?
Yeah, parallax scrolling.
Parallax is pretty interesting. So, like, the way that it works is that, you know, it's kind of like a visual element that, you know, the way that, you know, things that are a lot closer to you move a lot faster sideways than they do than things that are away from you. It's kind of like a basic perspective thing. So in other words, like in order to kind of simulate like really fast speed, what they did with Sonic is that, you know, for the first and second levels of Sonic, if I remember correctly, they have several layers of parallax scrolling in the background to kind of really enhance the speed in which, like, you know, Sonic is actually running. You know, so obviously, if they want to simulate really fast speed, they'll increase the amount of parallax layers, like, in the background, mm-hmm. and then have the foreground, like, go really, really fast, and then, you know, kind of, you know, have everything properly, like, scale in the background.
Okay. And I believe Space Harrier does that.
Yes, it does.
It does that. And
well, let me think. No, because Space Harrier is different because it moves into the screen.
Okay. So maybe that's why the 3D benefits it so well.
Yeah.
Because I'll tell you this. When you turn on the 3D, it is worth playing that game in. Usually, look, the 3DS 3D is a nice little novelty. But to me, it's not the highlight of that console, of that handheld.
Right.
That handheld could do a lot of other neat stuff. I just, you know, think that Nintendo kind of mixed up the message. However, looking at Space Harrier, the 3D is very cool. That game just really benefits from it. It just looks really damn good. And another thing that's really cool is, unlike other games, there is no slowdown. The game still moves at a high speed rate in 3D.
That's a lot of... I would expect it to do so, right? Yeah. I mean, it is emulated, you know, like low low quality graphics. So I mean, relative low quality graphics. Yeah. I'm not trying to make fun of it or anything. I do love Space Harrier. It's one of my favorite Genesis games. But yeah, I mean, it's a fantastic game. It's actually been one of my favorites. Have you ever played Planet Harrier, which is the arcade version that was released within the past 10 years or so?
No, I have not. I've heard good things about it.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. I played it once, and it's just like, all right, well, this is Space Harrier, but brought to a modern time. This is pretty fucking awesome. I was really sad to hear that they weren't planning to port that after they did port, like, Outrun several times.
Oh, my, Afterburner Climax?
Yeah.
That I love that game, and they should have ported it, because that Afterburner Climax is fucking awesome.
Yeah, yeah, it's really sad that that never came to fruition. But anyways, So that's Space Harrier for you, huh?
Right. One last thing about the port, too, I have to mention. There's a feature, and it's optional. This is so cool. You can turn it on, and what it'll do is it'll give you the effects of the arcade. So, like, you know how you remember the old arcade, how it would move? Those full-fledged arcade machines?
Mm-hmm.
It would give you that effect. So every time you move right, the screen actually has an effect where it'll tilt.
Interesting.
And it adds to it. Mm-hmm. So I am with it's $5. It's $5.
Okay.
I know you have a vow of never downloading any downloadable games. Yeah, but to anybody,
not for Nintendo specifically, so no.
Yeah, but to anyone else that's looking for what I think is the best port of Space Harrier, download the 3DS port, and you'll never have to play Shenmue ever again. Well, that's me anyway. I know there's a lot of Shenmue fans, but that's how low I think of that game.
Jesus. I mean, I'm laughing half-heartedly because I'm like, okay, dude. Like, I mean, I'm pretty sure a lot more people play, like, Shenmue more than just Space Harrier.
You know what? I got so tired of that game, of Shenmue itself. And we've talked about this, but just real quick. That the only reason that I would turn on Shenmue, and I invested hours and hours in Shenmue, was so that way I could take Ryo to work, make money, so that way, and do the tedious work mini games. Remember that shit?
Yeah.
And then go back and play Space Harrier. So I actually did physical work in a video game to play Space Harrier.
Jesus. That is insane.
Yeah, insane. Now, the next game I played.
Wait. Should we do alternates? That way we So it wouldn't be like, I mean, I don't want to say it's like it's going to be boring, but I think like it would be interesting to kind of alternate between the both of us so that.
Let's do that.
Yeah, so that we can, you know, so that people be like, oh my God, Anthony's games, holy shit, he played a lot. And especially me, you know, like especially today where it's going to be a shit ton of like fucking games.
I've only played really two games.
Oh, so. Wow. Wow. So.
But the other one we could talk so much more about, though. But okay. Let's do yours.
So, Hell Has Frozen Over.
Okay. How so?
I bought a game that you wouldn't think that I would never ever play ever in my entire life.
What game?
I'm letting you guess.
A Tales game, something like that. I don't know.
No.
A shooter? A Halo game?
No. I mean, I bought Killzone Mercenaries like a while back, so that's not entirely true.
Okay, what? I have no clue.
Pokemon Y.
You are a good man. You are a good dude. That is the best.
What were you gonna say? You were like you.
Like, you are a good man. You are a good man.
Talk to the mic.
You are a good man.
There
Alex.
You go.
There you go. Fuck. No. I'm just in shock. Okay. I am in total shock. You bought Pokemon Y.
Yeah.
Nice. You won't regret that game. I hope you don't regret it.
Well, I mean, I played it, so...
Okay.
I beat my first Pokemon Gym Master? That's what they're called?
Yeah.
And, you know, the battles definitely are, like, pretty, you know, they're a lot better. They do flow a lot faster and stuff. You know, so it's pretty fun. It still has the same trappings as Pokemon, but the fact that it's got a brand new game engine, like rendering engine, and you know everything is pretty neat and stuff. It's very, you know, it's very welcoming. It's a little bit more welcoming than previous Pokemon games, but you know, like the whole time, like I've been playing, I was like thinking to myself, God damn it, you know, like it's a good thing I'm not Ash Ketchum because that fool just
worthless.
I don't I don't get it. Like, I've been thinking a lot about, like, you know, when we've talked about that dude, like, you know, in the Pokemon series, in the cartoons and the movies, and I'm like, God damn, that guy sucks. It's like, how many episodes is he gonna have to go through in order to, like, really get that, you know, like, Pokemon, I guess. I don't know.
And I've been a Pokemon master many times over.
Yeah.
The last 16 years that show has been on the air.
It's crazy, right? Like, the whole time I was playing Pokemon, like, that's all I can think about. Like, Ash Ketchum fucking sucks ass. And yet he's the main character. What in the fuck is going on with that series?
Now you understand why I ranted about that some time ago in an early episode of Social Link.
Yeah, I mean, beat, like, my first Pokemon master. I'm like, she was pretty easy. Like, I had, like, a level 12, like, oh god, the Firefox.
Oh, Fennekin.
Fennekin?
Yeah, Fennekin.
Yeah, I was like, all right, this is kind of cool. I mean, you know, like, I'm still, you know, I'm getting, like, a lot of the older Pokemon now since it is, like, the starter area and stuff. And I've kind of, like, stopped grinding and I just kind of, like, kept with, like, one character for the time being. Because I'm like, all right, I don't really need to grind in this game, I don't think. So I'm just going to keep moving around and spending my money and stuff. Because I've been spending a lot of my money on just, like, items and whatnot. Not really, like, any sort of implements or what have you. So yeah. I'm like, okay. Whatever, I'm just gonna go around and enjoy the game. But, you know, that's... I bought Pokemon because my friend actually has Pokemon X, and she was like, well, you know, you should get Pokemon Y. And I'm like, why? It's like, it's actually a lot better than you think it is. And I'm like,
okay. I've been telling you this.
It's like, you know, several people have told me about this. Ted from, you know, of course, our website, GamerHorizon.com. And, of course, this girl, and then you. And I'm like, all right, I'll try it. I mean, it's still, you know, there's no character development whatsoever. It's still very light RPG, yeah. Pokemon-ish. But, you know, I kind of figured, too, it's like, okay, I have played Persona 4 multiple times already. You know, maybe it's time for me to go back to Pokemon and kind of see, like, how well I would fare in that regard. And, you know, there's still, you know, it is inherently Pokemon. It is the same. Like, you know, you can only have 4 abilities per Pokemon and, you know, and all that stuff. But there's this item that was actually really neat that they gave me where kind of like, I'm not sure if any previous Pokemon games did it, where basically, like, it's an item that allows for experience point distribution across all your Pokemon. Like,
I don't know. I think it might have been... I'm thinking maybe Diamond and Pearl maybe had that. I think. I could be totally wrong.
Yeah, because, I mean, that's a big fucking pain in the ass to begin with when some of your Pokemon won't get experience points. It's kind of the same thing with Final Fantasy X. I believe there was a similar, I want to say, like, ability that you can have where I want to say, like, everybody gets experience as opposed to just only a few, so... I'm trying to remember, but, you know, my memory is pretty hazy of Final Fantasy X, which I have not gotten back to, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So, but yeah, that's Pokemon Y. So, how about you?
You're digging Pokemon Y. I'm happy, Alex. We'll have to trade.
Okay.
But you're not having my level 100 Charizard.
I don't really give a shit about that. I'm not that hardcore to Pokemon. I'm just playing it.
78 hours into it, my friend.
Ooh, ouch.
Post-game.
No wonder you've only played 2 games.
Well, I haven't played Pokemon in a while, so.
Okay.
To be honest.
Crazy.
Now, I just haven't had time. You know my situation this week. The other game is a game that for some people was highly anticipated. It's a game that's been released multiple times. But I bought it for the Wii U and I bought it for DS, the 3DS. Because it's in my top 10 games, favorite games of all time.
Okay.
And there's a reason for that because I've been playing it. It's been my main game for the last couple days. Okay. And that is Super Mario Bros. 3.
Okay.
Yep. Yep, Super Mario Bros. 3. And this game, I have a lot to say about it to this day. Because this is a game... This is the true definition of a game that can fucking age.
Mm-hmm.
Holy shit, this game ages well.
Yeah, I mean, the first time I saw Mario being animated in that game, I basically called it. I said, this is a game that's going to be remembered for generations to come. Because the way that he animated was so unique, and it's almost, it's interesting because it fakes the 3D of, you know, the 3D in a 2D world. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, that was like, I mean, it's such a big deal back then, and, you know, people, you know, who didn't grow up experiencing this will never understand. And I don't want to sound like an old man, but like when I saw like Mario, you know, the other, like Mario's other eye, and I was like, whoa, what the hell? You know, I was like tripping out. I was like, holy shit, this is fucking cool.
That I remember that game's pre-release. The hype started with the release of a little movie called The Wizard.
Oh, I knew you were going to talk about that game.
I'm not going to talk about The Wizard. There's so much to talk about The Wizard in itself because it's such a bizarre film. It's a shitty film.
Yeah, movie, by the way. Sorry, excuse me.
Oh, it's a movie, yes. It's a shitty movie. But...
Isn't it, like, about this kid who wants to go to the Nintendo World Championships, which, by the way, don't happen at all?
It's the, It's basically a ripoff of the Rain Man story.
but for kids.
Yeah, for kids. And they go off on this journey to go to the Nintendo Championship. And there's so many cases of child endangerment. I mean, they hitch rides with so many hitchhikers in that movie.
Yeah, that's true.
These are like 10-year-olds and shit. But what was the reason I remember I got to go see the film when I was a kid, and the reason I got to go see it was for one primary reason. Remember, we lived in the day and age before, you know, when the new trailer comes out, we can get on our phones, we can get on our goddamn computers, we could do that, see the trailer, right? If a game's still in Japan, we could see someone who imported it and playing it, right?
Right.
Back then, we didn't have that luxury. And at that point, Mario Brothers 3, remember this, folks, came out in 88 in Japan. We did not get it till at least March 1990.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So, the only ways we could see it was in early Nintendo Power magazines, which only a select few kids got, the privileged kids got in those days. And then The Wizard. And The Wizard was the first look at that fucking game that we got. A lot of people forget that.
Right.
And when I saw that game, like, you know, the warp whistles and, you know, the raccoon suit and shit, just looking at that footage blew my mind.
Yeah, but I mean, that whole movie is fucking ridiculous. And I mean,
it is.
A fucking brand new game. Oh, you know where the warp whistles are. Obviously, you played the game before. And let's not forget the Power Glove Kid.
the main antagonist of the game.
Yeah.
Of the movie, I mean, whatever the fuck. Fuck that movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a shitty movie, but that's why I went to see it as a kid, you know? And it's a movie, no, I know a lot of people like, it's one of those guilty pairs. No, it's a shitty movie. I won't ever watch it again. Okay? Yeah. Okay?
I've had the privilege to not watch the movie.
Yeah, you did have the privilege of not watching the movie, which is nice. But yeah. You know what was cool, too, about it was, and I don't have it anymore, but when you went to see that movie, they actually gave out these booklets. And
what?
These booklets, and it was just full of NES stuff, and it had more Mario Brothers 3, and it had that cover of Mario Brothers 3 where it showed Mario flying from the airship,
mm-hmm.
and it had, like, Princess Toadstool tied to the mast or whatever.
Oh, the Japanese cover.
Yeah, it showed all that. And
that cover was so kick-ass. I lived in the Philippines when Mario 3 came out, and when I saw the cover for the American version, I was kind of, a part of me kind of died.
Yeah,
because I saw, like, because in Japan, the cartridge was so full of, like, color and artwork that it's so cool, too, because, like, you saw, like, you know, you basically saw the Koopa kids there.
Yeah.
You know, like, on the actual artwork. And I was like, oh, my God, that's so fucking cool. There's, like, new enemies and new characters. Holy shit. It was awesome. Like, I love Mario 3 to this day.
It is an amazing game. And I will say this, I purchased it and sent Thursday when it came out, and that's been my main game. That says a lot about that game, right?
Yeah, I don't know if I can still play it. I mean, the thing is with me and certain games and stuff is that I have played certain games so much that sometimes I'm not even playing it anymore, and it's just a matter of muscle memory.
Yeah.
That's how much I played Mario 3. We're talking about all the way up until the white block that you hold down in, and so you're, like, in the background.
Yeah.
Which is such a trip. It's like, what? Like, why would you... Yeah, it's just, that's just a crazy fucking idea, like, you know, to hide the warp whistle behind the background. You know, it's crazy.
Well, if when you play the game, even to this day, I think it's insane. That game's just fucking insane. And I'll tell you why. Don't get me wrong. I think Super Mario World's a fine game. It's a great game. Right? Super Mario World? And it looks very good to this day, right? Wouldn't you agree? Super
Mario World? Yeah. It definitely... I mean, the introduction to Yoshi and stuff, it's great. Yeah, it's pretty awesome. Colorful.
But this is where I might get some shit. It lacks the imagination that 3 had. And I'll tell you why. It had cool stuff. It had the haunted houses, don't get me wrong. But each world, in a gameplay aesthetic, also matched it thematically. So, for example, the desert world felt like a desert, both gameplay-wise and graphically. You had the sun that would fucking chase you. You had levels of quicksand. You had stuff like that, right?
You mean you basically had unique challenges depending on the world that you're in.
Yeah, exactly. And then there was the giant world.
I love the giant world. I also love the piranha plant world.
Yeah, that's the seventh world, I believe. And then there's the sky world, which I'm on now, the fifth world.
Mm-hmm.
And that world's just a fucking bitch. But that game is just, you know, what's cool about it too is you in the sky world, you actually start on land and then there's a tower you have to climb.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of had like this kind of like, you know, it wasn't just you went to the next level and it was, you know, that. It kind of had a flow to it and it made each world feel more organic.
It's very, you know, it definitely, there's a lot of creativity when it came to the level design and the thematics of each of the levels in that world, which is why I, you know, when the developers of Super Mario 3D Land talked about 3D Land in a sense that they were inspired a lot by Super Mario Bros. 3, that's when I knew, like, that 3D Land was going to be special.
That's why 3D Land and 3D World are so great games, because they have the feel of Super Mario Bros. 3.
Mm-hmm. And it's difficult to remember that this is the same team that was responsible for Galaxy. I mean, Galaxy and the 3D Mario games, like literally 3D Mario games, like 3D Land and 3D World, it's so difficult to kind of make that association, because it seems like they're just made by completely different teams. Mm-hmm. But in reality, they are made by the same team, you know? It's crazy.
And the Galaxy games aren't bad. I like them. No. I enjoy them. Yeah. They're really good. But the 3D World and the 3D Land games have that same feel that Mario Brothers... It had that wonder that, you know, I loved as a kid. And, I mean, it has that inventiveness that, you know, that game had. Not saying that other Mario games are bad. I love all modern Mario games. The only ones that I'm not too keen on are 64... And, which you know why, I won't explain it now, new Super Mario Brothers, the original, the DS version.
I am a fan of all of them so far, even, you know, New Super Mario Brothers 2, because, you know, 2D Mario games, why not, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm kind of with the same camp with you as far as Mario 64 goes, because it just didn't feel like Mario to me.
It still doesn't feel like Mario.
Yeah. But yeah, let's not get into that. Yeah,
let's not get into that because we're going to anger a lot of people, because that game's still held in high esteem. But you can't deny the importance of it, though, what it did for the industry. So
yeah. But to me, like, you know, my take on it is that the first real 3D platformer was Tomb Raider.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Because that was released way before Mario 64, and I played that. I'm like, holy shit, platforming just got interesting, like a lot more interesting than just jumping platforms and stuff. You can climb platforms. Again, this is all, you know, at this point, I'm just grabbing nostalgia from like the air and just indulging in it right now.
Now, real quick on Mario Brothers 3, just the stuff, like playing it again, just astounded me. There's other things too, like in the canoe. Do you remember the canoe?
Yeah.
Okay. So for people that know what I'm talking about, they did some cool stuff with the world map.
Mm-hmm.
So in World 3, if you get, you know, there are hidden areas that you can discover on the world map by breaking blocks, these boulders, mm-hmm. with hammers.
Yes.
And one of those is, there's an area where you break the boulder, boom, you go into it and you find a canoe. And you get on the canoe, you row it to this island just full of goodies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's those, and that brings me to the mini-games. There's several mini-games in this fucking game.
Mm-hmm.
The first mini-game, of course, is the kind of that one where you match.
Yeah, the slot machine.
The slot machine for extra lives. And then there's a memory game.
Mm-hmm.
Which is cool because you actually get items to help you out.
Mm-hmm.
And then three, there's a port, one of the earliest known ports of the original Super Mario Brothers. Of Mario Brothers. Not Super mm-hmm. Mario Brothers, but Mario Brothers.
Yeah.
So that's...
Which can only be accessed, you know, with two players.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's in the game. So, I mean, even in its original form, that game is packed. And it has so mm-hmm. much replayability to it.
Replay values?
No, not replayability. So,
jeez, you gotta watch your pronunciation, man. Know, like, replay is only like a few pronunciations away.
Yeah, I know. We won't go into that. But yeah, it's an astounding achievement in gaming to this day, I think. And I am glad that is now available on Wii U. I am glad it's available on the 3DS. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, there's tons of re-releases, there's ways to get it, you know, but, I mean, it's awesome.
Come on, you own a Nintendo console, there's gotta be a way for you to fucking get this game.
Yeah, I mean, exactly.
You know, let's not kid ourselves here.
Yeah, there's plenty of ways to get it. I mean, fuck. Come on, fuck. And, I mean, even the GBA, remember the GBA port?
And yeah.
Now, real quick before we move on to you, the GBA port and Super Mario All-Stars, how do you feel about those?
I don't give a shit. I mean, they're still pretty accurate to me, but there's, you know, I'm kind of a purist when it comes to those games. I like their ability to work with limitations, you know, on the NES. Mm-hmm. So I vastly prefer the NES versions over the Super Nintendo versions.
And the GBA.
Yeah.
Yeah. I will say I do know of a one difference in that game. In mm-hmm. You know how, okay, so in the crux of the story of the game, as little as there is, mm-hmm. each world, you know, you go to, the kings of each kingdom get transformed into different animals by the Koopa kids.
Yep.
And in one of them, I don't know which one it was, but in one of them, it was a different animal in the original NES, and then in the Super Mario All-Stars and GBA version, it's a Yoshi.
What?
Yeah.
Weird.
Yeah. So, there you go. And then in the GBA version, he's got the Charles Martinet voiceover.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Which, you know, is a nice touch. I mean, I more power to him for being the official voice of Mario.
Which isn't bad, as long as he's not talking in long phrases.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's Super Mario Brothers 3.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I've been playing. Very, very original, huh?
Jesus. Yeah, my list of games that I played to put yours to pasture.
I know.
I know.
Let's go through the ones that are least important real quick to you.
To me?
Yeah.
Jeez. I don't know if they're really least important because they're like... I mean, obviously, I've been playing a lot of them... A lot of them, like, in equal amounts lately. Fuck. I've been playing Resogun, I guess. I guess it's least important, but not in the sense that it's not that important.
Okay.
But I love that game. I mean, it's from the guys who made Super Stardust Delta. Just the gameplay is so fast and frenetic. It's a very creative way to do twin-stick shooters, you know, than the norm. So it's basically, like, Defender... But, you know, that's basically what Resogun is. But even describing it that way is not giving the game justice.
You remind me, I do have a third game we could talk about afterwards. Keep going, though.
Okay.
Okay.
But, you know, that's Resogun. Like, it's something that, you know, I enjoy playing, like, you know, with, you know, by myself or, like, with my roommate sometimes, which, you know, she's, you know, when she feels like it, she'll pop in Resogun. But... Since you do have a third one, I do want to kind of talk about this other game, which is a 3DS game. It's called Disney Magical World.
Okay.
Disney Magical World. That's what it's called. So, Have you heard of this game?
No, I have not.
You really need to read up on your fucking news, man. Disney Magical World is pretty awesome. It's basically like a mix of Monster Hunter and Animal Crossing.
What the fuck?
Yep. So, the way that it works is that you are a new resident in, you know, Castleton, which is basically like a town filled with Disney characters like Mickey, Donald, Minnie, Daisy, and, you know, all those other guys. And pretty much it's a life simulation is kind of the more accurate way, but you're not going to be dealing too much like weed pulling and, you know, not running when there's flowers around because you're going to like trample on flowers and stuff. You don't have a mortgage to have to deal with. So in a way, like it's a lot more, friendly to new players, new gamers and stuff. So you're a new resident in Castleton, and your objective is to basically get these stickers. Now, these stickers are things that gate certain pieces of content, whether it's new, more clothes, more furniture, and, you know, more experiences. But what's interesting, though, about this game is that you have a constant influx of revenue through a cafe that you actually run. The cafe is interesting because you can, you know, you have to find like recipes for food and its ingredients in order to build, I don't know, like several, several pieces of food items to fill your menu. So you have like kind of like a starter, you have a dessert, and you have a drink. Or rather, I'm sorry, maybe like an entree, a drink, and then a dessert dish. And then you, for each of them, you have to find like the different recipes and the different ingredients for each. A lot of this game has a lot of different crafting. So like when you want to build outfits and stuff, you need to only find the ingredients for that outfit and the recipe in order to build it, which can be freely available by harvesting, you know, like different areas of Castleton, or, you know, buying it from McDuck's. And he has like a department store where he sells his own furniture and clothes and ingredients. And of course, if you want to sell stuff to Scrooge McDuck to buy from you, you know, he'll do that as well.
Very interesting game already.
Yeah, so furniture has the same kind of setup. So but basically, like, you know, Chip and Dale have like kind of like a furniture building shop that's actually separate from McDuck's, and they will actually build furniture based off of recipes. Daisy Duck has a very similar setup as well, but for clothes. You can build outfits, you know, for your characters. And what's interesting is that if you build a ensemble outfit, everybody who you pass by gives you like a thumbs up, kind of like a like on Facebook, and they actually keep track of that, because later on you can use those thumbs up as currency in a fortune teller store.
I see the Animal Crossing coming in,
but it's very interesting because like there's not a moment that's tedious about this game. You also get wands from Yen Sid, you know, from Fantasia and stuff, which is Disney backwards, in case people still don't know that. He builds wands for you to use in the dungeons. Now, this is going to sound funny. The first world that you unlock is Cinderella's world, and a lot of it has something to do with the fact that the forests surrounding Cinderella's castle have ghosts in it. Like, not like any discernible Disney ghosts, mind you. It's just generic ghosts that were built for this game. And then you use wands in order to fend off, you know, the different monsters. Now, you get specific outfits that will graft you, you know, plus HP and plus magic while you're actually, like, in those dungeons. And you get, of course, those recipes when you explore these dungeons. And they're very basic. You explore a dungeon, you basically use your wand, so you have, like, a long-range attack. These, you know, ghosts spawn from time to time. There are locked areas with, you know, switches that can turn them on. But they have an interesting mechanic, and in these dungeons, you get these red diamonds that you can use to replenish all your health back. There is a... When you finish a dungeon, at the end of the dungeon or quest... Dungeons and quests are interchangeable, so it's basically the same thing. You cannot explore a dungeon without a quest. At the end of the quest, you get this huge chest that... that unlocks at the very, very, very end of the quest. Like, after you get the quest item, there's this big chest that pops up. The rarity of the items that appear from opening that chest is determined how many by how many red diamonds that you actually save up till the end. So in other words, if you're clumsy and you keep using like the red, you know, diamonds, the rarity of the items that pop out of that chest will drop.
What the fuck?
It'll get closer to common items.
Okay. So, okay. I'm just bewildered by this game.
What? What do you mean?
Just,
what are you
a lot
bewildered
to do.
About?
There's just yes. a lot to do in it.
Mm-hmm.
Disney's Magical World, you said?
Yeah.
What is it on?
It's 3DS.
3DS, okay.
Of course. Okay. And no one's gonna make fun of you for like pushing forward or pushing back time. Right now, it's Easter in the game, so obviously a lot of the Easter eggs that you would normally see in Disneyland, you would see in Castleton right now, which is kind of a neat, you know, kind of thing. But also, what's interesting is that, you know, between 8:30 and 9 p.m., fireworks happen just like in the real parks.
Really?
Yes.
Damn.
And there are four total worlds. There, as I mentioned, there's Cinderella's world. There is Alice. There's Alice in Wonderland. There is Winnie the Pooh, and there's Aladdin. So those are the four worlds that you can actually explore. And again, as you may imagine, because this game is very heavy on crafting, each world has different crafting materials that you get.
Wow.
Yeah, I haven't even talked about the fact that you can actually farm in, you know, in Winnie the Pooh's world.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
You know, I mean, you can do that. You can get honey from, you know, the honey trees and stuff. And then depending on what flowers you have in your, you know, your field, they'll determine what kind of honey
Jesus.
You can get. I mean, it is insane, the kind of shit. Oh, and then there's fishing. You know, Donald will teach you fishing. It's crazy the amount of things that you can do in this game.
Okay. Jesus Christ. Alex,
it's really good. I want to say like some places have it for sale right now for like $30. Best Buy, the local Best Buy, did have it for $30. It usually retails for $34.99, but get it for $30. I would go get it, dude. Like seriously, like this is addicting as fuck.
Sounds like sounds a little Rune Factory-ish to me a little bit.
Yes, actually, you know, a lot of people were comparing the game to Rune Factory, but not as deep as Rune Factory. You know, it strikes a great balance, and you know, and the thing is too, it does that trickle thing of like, yeah, you got these stickers, but it's like, but there's so much more to explore. Like in the dungeon, like there in the castle, there's a dungeon that you can lock only like when you have like 60 stickers, and I'm like, this is crazy to me.
It is fucking crazy, man. Cool. Yeah. Game though, sounds like a cool game.
It is. It's really addicting. I mean, that's out of all the games I've been playing, I've probably been playing that the most, because every 5 a.m and 5 p.m there are timed quests that last for 12 hours. So, like, the 5 a.m. quest lasts up until 5 p.m., the 5 p.m. quest lasts until 5 a.m., and then, you know, like, they'll give you either recipes or, you know, ingredients for other clothes or furniture. It's nuts.
Damn.
And then I'm at a point in the game right now where the second floor of the cafe has been turned into my own bedroom.
Damn.
So now I have my own residence, because apparently the first 30 levels or something like that, 30 stickers and stuff, I was just kind of running around sleeping on benches.
You're a hobo?
I guess so, but there are no benches in the game, so go figure.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's Disney Magical World.
Okay, Disney Magical World.
Yes. So how about you? What's your third game?
Okay. So this week I got in the mail a game that I had not played in years, and I wanted to see how it hold up. It's a PS1 game. Go old school again, but not as old school as we did earlier. It's one of the most unique shoot 'em ups I've ever played.
Omega
and
Boost.
I think, huh?
Omega Boost?
No. This is really, this is old school PS1. This is 1995 PS1. Philosoma.
Oh, yeah, wow.
Yeah. And you know what surprised me? Fucking game holds up.
Interesting.
Gameplay-wise. Graphically, not so much, because there's a lot of full-motion video, like there was in a lot of those games in those days. And, you know, it's kind of like Tekken 1, full motion video.
Yeah.
But it does some cool things that it kind of, you know, laid the groundwork for. Okay, so Philosoma was a shooter that was released here in the United States. It was one of the early PS1 games.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to me, there's two early PS1 games that are very nostalgic for me. That's one of them. The other is Cyber Sled.
Okay.
But which I just found out came out on PlayStation Network not too long ago. They're still releasing PS1 classics.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of thought they stopped on those, but apparently not. So.
Yeah.
But I did get that game too, but I didn't really play it a whole lot. Maybe I'll talk about it next week. But Philosoma for now is... I was fascinated for Philosoma because when I got my PlayStation, it came with that demo disc, and it came with the purple disc, mm-hmm. which is the first PlayStation demo disc. And it had videos, and the one that always struck me the most, other than the Tekken video, because I love Tekken in the arcade, was mm-hmm. that Philosoma video, yeah. which was very cinematic, and it was kind of spooky.
Mm-hmm.
And you put in the game, and it still, you know, that trailer was one of the first game trailers, if not the first game trailer I saw, that captured the feel of a game exactly. The other one that was kind of spooky to me on that disc was Kalik, the DNA Imperative, but that game sucks.
Hmm.
So there you go. But Philosoma holds up really well. Now, it's a shmup,
yeah.
okay?
Mm-hmm.
But it's an interesting one, and I'll tell you why. Couple things. First thing, it has a lot of full motion video, but the game was probably one of the early ones to attempt to do transitions from full motion into gameplay.
Yeah.
Now, it doesn't do it as well as, say, like Final Fantasy VII, but it does it good enough to make it seem a little seamless.
Definitely, so, like, you know, early technology when it comes to that.
Yeah, yeah, early technology, definitely. Like, what'll happen is you'll see a cutscene, and then it'll go, like, it's an overhead shooter. Well, it kind of is, I'll explain that in a moment.
Mm-hmm.
But when it switches the view to it, the cinematic scenes will switch. The camera will pan in the full motion video to over the head, and then there's a little brief loading second, and then the game will go into the gameplay. So mm-hmm. it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool. What makes Philosoma unique, though, is, unlike other shmups, it changes its point of view.
Mm.
Okay? Now, when I was waiting for this game, I was like, is this going to hold up that well?
Mm-hmm.
Is it going to be bad? Because the best shmups, you know, remember our discussions on cave games? None of those games change their point of views, and they hold up very well.
Mm-hmm.
And they, you know, right?
Yeah.
Right? Now, Philosoma has several points of view. There's the overhead, kind of classic, you know, ride-in,
right.
That type of view. There's a, you know, R-type view, side-scrolling. Then there's a three-dimensional kind of Space Harrier, Panzer Dragoon view. And then there's another perspective where you're in front of the plane, and then there's enemies that chase you.
Mm-hmm.
What this does is Philosoma has a pretty... It has an interesting story. It's not a deep story, but it's interesting that you kind of give a shit, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And basically, it matches the tone of that story.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, if you're getting chased by enemies, it'll use that in front of perspective,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to just an overhead perspective.
Yeah.
If you're blasting through meteors, it'll use the overhead perspective. You know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Philosoma holds up well. I was worried about the two, three-dimensional perspectives, but they hold up well.
Mm-hmm.
Philosoma is a really overlooked game. I think it's fucking good. I think it's really a fun game. It's not a bad game by any means. It's probably one of the better titles that come from that, you know, that fall 95 to maybe early 96.
Mm-hmm.
Era, you know, that kind of early stage
mm-hmm.
of the PlayStation 1's life. And it's probably the game that I played from that era that has aged the best. Because, be honest, most games from that era, you play Tekken 1, hasn't aged exactly well, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you play Ridge Racer, hasn't aged well. You know, a lot of those games have... Resident Evil, sure as fuck, hasn't aged
games,
well.
Yeah, some games have aged well. I mean, I personally, like, I felt that R4, you know, Ridge Racer 4... And Rage Racer actually aged pretty well. Like, Rage Racer was released prior to Ridge Racer 4. And
oh yeah,
that one holds up a little bit better. I mean, it still has the trappings of the previous Ridge Racer games, but Ridge Racer to me was like my first, because I remember when I got my PlayStation and stuff, like I was trying to get Ridge Racer Revolution because I was like so addicted to it in the arcade, and then a dude said like, well, we have Ridge Racer. I'm like, what's that? And then it's like, oh, it's a much better version of Ridge Racer. And I played it and I'm like, okay, the environments are definitely a lot more interesting in this one, and the tracks are actually pretty interesting. So, and that, actually now you're making me want to see like if they have that, I might get that game.
Oh shit, Ridge Racer 4 and Ridge Racer, you said?
Yes.
Okay, I'm talking about the original though.
Yeah.
Yeah, because a lot of those early PS1 games, you know, Air Combat, things like that, you know, which is now known as Ace Combat.
Yes.
Those type of things. But Philosoma really held out, and I'm surprised, and I think it's very playable, and it's enjoyable. You ever play it?
No, I've never actually played it. But what it reminds me of is it reminds me of Life Force for the NES, and in a much more recent, you know, a little bit between the NES and the PlayStation, Axelay.
You know what's funny about it, too, is you compare it to Life Force?
Mm-hmm.
It has a much... Because I have Life Force on my 3DS, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it has much of a similar tone to Life Philosoma. They both have a very similar tone. Mm-hmm. Because if I remember correctly, and anyone could correct me if I'm wrong, but in later levels, you kind of go into those organic type levels where they're kind of organic.
Right.
Like, you know, there's big pile masses of brain or muscle or whatever the fuck it is.
Mm-hmm.
And like fucking arms would sprout out from it, you know, like living fucking giant Tetsuos that you would shoot into.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that type of thing. So it does, and it does have that kind of feel to it,
right?
So, in my all honesty, Philosoma is one of the most unrated shmups out there, without a shadow of a doubt.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's Philosoma.
Yep. Okay. Ridge Racer 4 is available on PlayStation Network, so I might go get that.
Oh, it is.
Rage Racer isn't. I don't know why. So Rage Racer is interesting because it actually had a full-on career system.
Why is it called Rage Racer?
I have no idea. I didn't fucking name it.
I'm like, okay. I'm like, is it angry or...
No, it has nothing to do with being angry or anything. It's just like Rage Racer. That was it.
Okay. Because you're... Let's clarify this for any new listeners. I'm not really a big racing guy. Alex is into racers, though.
Yeah. Well, so. I'm very, very picky when it comes to my racers.
Yeah, you are.
Mm-hmm.
You are. You're picky with your games in general.
Yeah, I am. Very intensely critical.
Indeed, indeed. But anyhow, though, with that, you're going to go buy it?
I think so. But speaking of which, do you know that there's a flash sale right now going on for PlayStation Network?
Yeah, I don't know if there's really anything that interests me.
It's 99 cents. Are you shitting me?
Yeah.
The original Red Faction and Red Faction 2 are 99 cents each. The entirety of the season of Tales of Monkey Island, the entire third season of Sam and Max. Okay. And then there's like all three Crash games, all three Spyro games.
I have all those already.
Braid. you know, Echo Chrome 2. I mean, these are games Tokyo Jungle.
Okay, maybe that one.
There's a lot. You should check it out. Because I looked at it and I'm like, I said like, okay, I'm only going to walk away from this like four games. And then of course, you know, I remembered, fuck, I need like $5 at least to like fund my wallet, or else I'll have extraneous, you know, payments I have to do. So I bought like five or six games or something like that. So I repurchased, Tales of Monkey Island because I had that for the Wii, which it ran terribly. And of course, this has trophies. Yay!
I remember when you got that too. We talked about that on TPPBG or Twee Game.
Yeah,
back in the day,
it was good. It was good. It's funny. Definitely, probably hasn't aged well. A lot of Telltale games are discounted. By the time you guys listen to this, it will be gone. So I'm gonna refrain from talking about it more. But you should check it out, Anthony.
Okay.
But if you do have, like, anything that you bought, and we're talking to the listeners right now, email us at sociallinkpodcast@gamerhorizon.com. Tell us what you snagged for 99 cents for the PlayStation flash sale this weekend of Easter. I think, you know, I'm hoping, like, we can get some interesting responses from these guys and stuff with regards to that.
Hell yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see what happens. I don't know, man. I'm just... I've got enough to play. I think I'm in that.
It's kind of like... It's a weird logic. It's because it's like... Because you get free games for PlayStation Plus. And then, you know, you get this. It's like... It is 99 cents. They will go back up to $6 for each of these games. And some of them to like 20.
I'll take another look at it.
Because, I mean, these games are like... At most... Or at least, from what I remember, they're like at least $6 for some of these. Like, especially the PS1 games. And, you know... And getting Red Faction and Red Faction 2 for $1. Like, that's, like, crazy to me.
Okay, let me take a look at it. Okay. I'll take a look at it.
Yeah.
Real quick, though, I have to interject. I'm looking at the time of our recording. This is old school.
What?
This is old school Gamer Horizon Season 1 stuff.
What?
Going 59 minutes into what you're playing.
Oh, yeah. I mean, well, no, that's not all 59 minutes. I mean, we'd probably have talked a little bit less than that. But we've been recording since, like, we actually started talking. So, I mean, so let's see. For me, speaking of racing games, I did get Trials Fusion for the PS4.
How's that?
So, have you ever played any sort of motocross games, even on the original Game Boy?
Nope.
So you never played Motocross Madness for the Game Boy?
No.
Ah. So even Excitebike?
Yeah, Excitebike, of course. Who hasn't played Excitebike?
Yeah,
that game's cool, quirky.
So Trials basically tries to evoke that sort of feeling of Excitebike or, you know, Motocross Madness. The last real motocross kind of game that I played was pretty much Motocross Madness. Yes, there are those THQ motocross games, but I never really liked them because they were too complicated.
Oh, like the TNN and all that shit?
Something like that. But, you know, but they were good games. Don't get me wrong. Like ATV Off-Road Fury is kind of along the same lines, but you're an ATV. But as far as Trials goes, this is a long-running series that, you know, that Ubisoft's been going on about for a while. And they're usually time trials. So they're physics-based. They're heavy physics-based. And it's just your bike is on a 2D plane. You're not racing against anybody else. You're racing against time. And what's really fascinating to me about this game is I never really realized how much certain aspects of it have very puzzle-like elements. For example, there is a section of the game that they basically told me that, you know, see how far you can get in this level without actually leaning your bike. Now, as you can probably imagine, even though you haven't played any sort of motocross games, that leaning is very crucial when it comes to motocross because that's all about balancing, right?
Right.
Even in Excitebike, you know, like you'd have to figure out like how to land properly.
Yeah.
You know,
lean back, lean forward, that type of thing.
In this particular case, that particular level, you only had your brake and your gas. And because it is so heavy on physics, like, you actually have to, like, be careful not to just slam on your gas or else you'll actually tip over the, you know, the rider. And I felt like there's this really interesting kind of very puzzle-like element to an otherwise, you know, like, it's basically a time trial game. You know, that's why it's called Trials. It is multiplayer. I haven't played it with my roommate because I just got it literally last night. It's on sale for $20 without the season pass on the digital store. But if you buy it on the stores, I think it's $40 with the season pass. So, but otherwise, I felt like it's a really cool game. Like, I really dig it. It's funny because this is actually the game that I stayed up till like 2 a.m. to actually play. Yeah. So it's really fun. Like, if you love Excitebike, this is even simpler than Excitebike. It's just physics based. And for $20, you could go. You know, you can do worse.
Fuck, but you've been buying a lot of shit.
But of course, this is PS4 and Xbox One only. So there's that.
Yeah, I can't play it. Oh
yep,
well,
you can't play it.
Oh.
So should I continue?
Yeah, you got got a couple more.
I finished South Park: The Stick of Truth last night.
Nice.
Yes, the last boss is your traditional JRPG with multiple forms. Pretty awesome. pretty fucking awesome. Which, and they do it in such an elegant way. And when I finish the game, which I'm not going to tell you the ending of it, it's really hilarious because it ends like a South Park episode. You know, like in South Park and stuff, you basically see, like, you know, the credits and stuff for South Park. Yep, they have that.
Damn.
Including the Primus song that they play and stuff. You know, I was like, okay, this is great. And I have to say that my experience with this game, and I was telling my friend about this yesterday on the drive home from San Diego, this is by far probably the best episode of South Park you will ever see in your entire life. They will not be able to beat this.
Stick of truth, huh?
Yeah. Oh my god, the dungeons that you had to go through in this game, and you thought you've seen everything. Oh man, I can't. It is the kind of game that if you even make mention of a single thing that happens, or even the places that you explore and all this stuff, it would be too spoilery to talk about extensively.
Well, you know what?
I just can't.
Well, here's the thing. I'm going to wait for a price drop. I'm okay with that. Because, again, I have plenty to play. But yes. I will get it. I will get it when the price drops.
Oh, my God. This is running as, like, my game of the year this year so far.
Damn.
Yeah.
We'll see. I'll wait for a price drop.
Well, hopefully you get to play it before the end of the year. So when we do game of the year deliberations, you can actually like contribute something as opposed to like, oh well, I didn't play it. You need to be a little bit better when it comes to current games.
Hey, you know what?
How's that Tomb Raider going? How's that BioShock Infinite
going?
Oh
fuck you, dude.
I mean, I'm just saying they've re-released. You've taken so long that they actually managed to re-release Tomb Raider again
on new consoles.
On a new console. That is how fucking slow. Oh, not only that, but also Last of Us.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Don't worry. In September, I'll have a PS4.
And now you'll try to catch up with last year's games that were released on this year.
No, I'm getting Batman mostly, but I will have a PS4.
We need to have an overlap in games, so it'll be interesting to talk about certain shit.
We will. I will play Stick of Truth. I promise. I'm waiting for at least a $40 price drop, which shouldn't be too long.
That already happened, I think.
Oh well, then if it did, I'll go buy
down to $40.
Yeah.
Yeah, I want to say like certain places have them for $40 already.
Well, then there you go.
Okay. But I need to assign you homework, because this shit, like, we need to talk about. Like, I want to talk about it extensively in, like, a spoiler cast.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Because I know you're, like, a big South Park fan, too, and I'm, like, I was, like, shocked when you didn't pick it up. I was like, are you fucking shitting me? Like, you know, like, this is huge. Like, this is not, like, this is probably one of the best, JRPGs I've played in a long-ass fucking time.
Well, let's look at something real quick, okay? And this isn't about South Park per se. Here's this year, this first quarter has not been as extensive as the last 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, remember 2012? Holy fuck. Remember last year? Holy fuck, right?
Sure.
Okay, this year, it's been, cool stuff. Like, you know, I'm happy with the HD re-releases and things like that, but I mean, nothing real big except for maybe Stick of Truth from what I understand, so.
Okay.
So there you go, to be fair, you know, that's been our first quarter, but I will play it eventually, I promise, by the end of the year.
Okay, alright, listeners, you got this, you heard this, like, in this episode.
Fuck.
Yeah, call him out. I give you the right to call him out by the end of the year. If he has not played South Park, wail on him.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, fuck.
So, I played that. What else have I been playing? Lego Marvel Super Heroes. We covered that last week. Still a very fun game. It's just fun seeing like the Lego characters just kind of make fun of each other and stuff like that. It's really hilarious. I'm at a part right now where I'm playing as the X-Men.
Gotcha. Yeah.
So that's pretty fun. The one dude who voices I forget his name, but he voiced Spike Spiegel.
Oh. I know who you're talking about, but I forget his name.
But you know his voice. But
yeah.
He plays several characters in this fucking game, and it's a little distracting sometimes.
Jesus.
Well, because there's so many. Like, there's literally, like, 2 pages worth of, like, you know, Marvel superheroes that this game has. And I actually looked up the Lego game that you were talking about, the Lego Batman games, the DC superheroes. That's pretty good. It's made me curious about all the other Lego games. Let's put it that way, so... Mm. I'm not sure if I'm going to go back to try them out, but it's definitely piqued my interest.
They've gotten better over the years.
Yeah, that's why I'm kind of afraid of, like, moving backwards, is because they've learned so much from, you know, from the current games, like, you know, the Lego Movie game and Lego Marvel Superheroes, that I'm kind of like, I don't know if I want to go back to, like, the Star Wars one, because that was, like, their 1.0 for all the Lego games, you know, but... You know, all I keep hearing is that they're really good, so...
Lego DC Superheroes, the second one, the one from 2 years ago, is holds up very well. It's the really old ones you gotta be really careful of. Like, the first Lego Batman, or, you know... Or the early Star Wars.
See, my OCD's not gonna let me just buy, like, part two, because I'm like, there's a first part, No. Yeah. By the way, Persona 4, $10, PSN.
Oh, yeah, the PS2 version.
The PS2 version, yes. So, lots of games coming out. So, that is just a sampling of, like, what I've been playing. I mean, I've been playing some games on my Vita. I bought Everyday Shooter as part of the sale. And it just made me realize that, you know... And this is kind of part of the conversation that we had with the JRPGs. Remember that traditional shmups used to be just a Japanese thing?
Of course, they're not.
And now the West pretty much has some of the best shmups out there.
Mm-hmm.
Think about that.
Well, I'm not... Okay, they're making good shmups.
You remember... And also, you probably heard that Cave pretty much, like, dissolved their business, right? For iOS, yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the West is pretty much kicking ass in regards to that. At the end of the month, I pre-ordered my copy of Child of Light. I will be getting that on April 30th.
I did pre-order. Okay, I have a game to talk about because I did pre-order that.
Okay, sure. Okay,
there we go. Yes, I did pre-order that.
Okay, you said you were going to talk about it, so...
Yeah, Child of Light, yeah, I did pre-order that.
So the extent of our conversation is I pre-ordered it.
Yeah, pretty much. There's not much to say till we actually play it, but it looks fucking amazing.
So you checked out videos?
Yes, of course. I'm very pumped up for it.
So give me your thoughts then. Don't just leave it at that.
I don't know. It looks modern, but it looks traditional at the same time. It has the feel of a lot of the classic JRPGs. It doesn't look Western to me.
Mm-hmm. That's what I was telling you. It's like it is basically a JRPG with, like, a Western developer. This is exactly what I was telling you. That's dangerous.
Well, let's take a look at something real quick. Ubisoft. They're very good with Rayman to make games that don't look like Western games. And I hate to say this, but one of the flaws of Western games is they use a lot of dingy colors, right?
Sure. Yeah.
Okay. Let's be honest. They do. But you know, you look at Rayman. Holy fucking colors all over the goddamn place. So, I mean, this looks a lot like that, in a good way.
Yeah.
So, well, hopefully in a couple shows we'll be talking about that game.
Yeah, I can't wait. That is a game that, you know, I pre-order... This is probably the first game that I ever pre-ordered digitally.
I pre-ordered it too. I'm happy with that.
Yeah.
$15.
Yeah, $15 is not bad. I only wish I could pre-order... Transistor, but they don't have a pre-order page yet. Another game that I'm going to be looking forward to this Tuesday that's coming out is by far one of the many reasons why a lot of people bought a PlayStation 4. Mm-hmm. Octodad Deadliest Catch.
Okay.
Have you heard of this?
You're going to give me so much shit. No.
Octodad. I am banging my head against the pop filter of my microphone right now.
I haven't followed much PS4. Yes, I can. I cannot hear any fucking... I don't follow PS4 stuff right yet.
God damn it.
God damn it.
And you're like a co-host for like a video game podcast. Hey, shame on you.
Hey, I'm talking about stuff that's relevant, man. I know a lot
This is relevant!
Okay, but I know... Okay, but do you know a lot about the Nintendo?
Is relevant.
Okay, but I know what's going on with Nintendo. right now. I know about the Smash Brothers Direct. I know a lot about what's going on PS3. I'm just not following PS4 right now. Because I like to hear what you have to say about it, because you own a PS4.
Octodad Deadliest Catch is probably one of the funniest games you will ever play on any platform, including the PC, because it's actually out on the PC.
Mm.
But the plot is that you are a family man who basically like gets to do daily activities with your wife and two kids.
Okay. Okay. Hmm. It sounds like in the same vein of the recently released Goat Simulator that I've heard a lot about.
Except that you are an octopus pretending to be a human.
What the fuck? It sounds a little bit like Goat Simulator.
It's a little bit more structured than that. So, as you can imagine, it's a physics toolbox. It doesn't look too good compared to other games out there. I mean, this is another game that I would have pre-ordered, by the way. But I was sad like they didn't. Each of your limbs are controlled by the left and the right stick. And you do very menial tasks like, like barbecue burgers and stuff like that. But it's so difficult because the controls are so unwieldy that, it often causes like really funny situations.
Hmm.
Like, it's really difficult to describe without actually watching the game, but it's really fucking funny. So, for example, there's a button that toggles between your legs and your arms, right?
Right.
So, because what happens is, like, by default, you basically get control of your arms. Your left stick controls your left arm, your right stick controls your right arm. And it's literally, like, this tentacle that just kind of moves around and stuff and sticks to things. Because, you do have suction cups for hands. And then, you do stupid things like, make hamburgers and then give it to your family and stuff. It sounds really simple until you start walking. You basically, toggle to your feet, and then suddenly both the left and the right stick control your left leg and your right leg respectively.
What?
Yeah. So, try walking around with that. And if you can imagine that sort of situation, that's really, really crazy. And I'll tell you what, when we played this last year at E3, this had some of the more packed crowds out of the PS4 booth.
Packed.
As in a lot of people watched it and they thought it was ridiculous, but they wanted to play it. This is one of those games that you have to actually watch a video in order to, really get into it.
Okay, I'll go watch it.
And I swear to God, it's probably one of the funniest games you'll play by virtue of the fact that the physics simulation.
I will be watching E3 more carefully this year, so don't worry about that. We'll be cool on that, and then I'll be caught up with gaming news at least.
Oh, geez. At the very least, check out our write-ups on Octodad and all the videos that we have on the Game Horizon website, because we do have a fairly extensive coverage of this game. We really like this game, and we're definitely going to pick it up once it comes out this Tuesday.
Cool, cool. Octodad.
Yeah. Oh, and it does have a co-op mode.
Mm.
It's four players, and each player controls a set of limbs.
Really?
So one player can control the left arm, one player controls the left leg, one player controls the right leg, one controls the right arm. Yeah. So it's all about being funny with the physics simulation, and I feel like this is going to be an interesting game to play with people.
It will be.
Yeah.
PS4. Gotta get one. Well, September.
Yeah, and again, this is an indie game, right? To me, it's fascinating that it's actually out, and I have a lot of other games that I've played on the PS4, including Don't Starve, which is a great game. Played it a little bit, died, and it starved, mind you, but I'm okay with that. And a bunch of other things too. It's too much to mention. We're already close to an hour and a half of the recording, and we haven't even talked about our rant, which is, what are you actually going to be ranting about this
week? Okay, I talked about it. I don't even know if it's really a rant, but talking about emulation, I think it's more of a discussion, because I've been thinking about it, and I haven't heard much from the emulation world in a while, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I just think, well, it all stemmed from a post that you may have seen me do on Facebook, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Is, I'm a big comic book collector, right?
Yes.
And I made a statement that pissed off several people. and I'm going to say it again, I still stand by it.
Mm-hmm.
I made a statement that pretty much I have no respect for people who torrent digital comic books.
Mm-hmm.
Now, emulation, I'm a little different, may sound like I'm hypocritical, but I'll explain why comic books. Comic books are an industry that, despite its popularity, despite what's going on, it's still not the most prominent moneymaker, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and comic books, most comic books, whether they're reprinted or not, are easy to get. There's no doubt. Most things are easy to get in the comic book world. To purchase legally, right? And they're even easier thanks to a little app that you like, right? Called Comixology.
Which got bought out by Amazon, by the way.
Yeah, yeah. But still, you know, Comixology makes it so much easier, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing, is there's no reason why you should be fucking not buying your comic books because you have services like Comixology. You know, mm-hmm. most of Marvel's and DC library is on Comixology.
Mm-hmm.
Most of their complete libraries. If you can't find it physically, you could find it on Comixology. So that's my stance on that. And I'm completely anti, you know, pirating it. I'm not anti-digital, obviously, because I just promoted Comixology. I think digital comics are a great thing, as long as you're mm-hmm. buying it. And this is from a guy who has been for years searching, you know, I'm a collector, so I search and I hunt, and I put blood, sweat, and tears into my comic collecting.
Mm-hmm.
Emulation is different, okay? Because with comic books, everything is printed in English, and that may sound silly, but this is a valid point, okay? In video games, not everything we can play is put in English. That's one of the points I'm making about why I have a kind of a love-hate relationship with emulation. So, shall I?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
There you go. I don't know if you really can call what I'm going to talk about today at RAM, but it is something that have been debating with myself for many years, and that's the subject of emulation. Emulation is one of those, for it or you're not for it, well, or you're in the middle, whatever. It's a pretty controversial issue, and it's a very complex issue in the world of gaming because get to emulation, you know, there's different types. There's legalized, illegal, all of that. And I think emulation can be a double-edged blade in a lot of ways. I have recently changed my stance on piracy, if you've seen my posts on Twitter or Facebook or something like that. When it comes to comic books, I'm very anti-piracy on comic books. And I'm mostly with that with games. I mean, let's be honest. Here's my stance on emulation with that front. There should be no reason why you should be emulating Final Fantasy VI, Super Mario Bros. 3, or any Super Mario Bros. Game for that matter. There should be no reason as to why you should emulate a lot of those games or anything on PlayStation Store or even a lot of lesser known games these days. There's really no reason to emulate those. However, here's the tricky part about emulation, and this is a topic Alex and I have talked many, 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 many times. You know, the purpose, emulation has served some positive things, surprisingly, and has fed a community that is still very active, and that's the fan translation. Now, like I said, there should be no reason why you should be emulating a lot of these games, because they're very easy to access. However, emulation serves two purposes, I think, in a positive way. It brings games over that we cannot experience otherwise, in a way that we can experience them, and it can preserve games that would be lost to us. So, let me explain that. Number one, if you go back to the late 90s, when emulation started going and you had emulators such as ZSNES and things like that. Final Fantasy, you know, when 7 came out, really was a boom in that direction. However, when we got Final Fantasy 7, we only had 4 of the 7 Final Fantasies at that point. We had 1, 2, 3, and 1, 4, 6, and 7. Here's the thing. We didn't have easy access to the games like we do today. And plus, we didn't know what these other games entailed. So we started getting fan translations of Final Fantasy V. We started getting Final Fantasy II, Final Fantasy III. You know, it allowed us to play games that were not easily accessed. And even to this day, a lot of the Square games from the SNES era, or the Super Famicom, were not brought over to the Super NES. So games like Live a Live, or that Bahamut one, or you know, the Bahamut game, Bahamut Lagoon, excuse me, or you know, Treasure Hunter G, or you know, Seiken Densetsu 3, or things like that, and I probably said that completely wrong. But the point is a lot of those games we could not have been able to play. There are a bunch of other RPGs from Square that we would not have been able to play. And to be honest, some games, such as Tales of Phantasia, we've gotten a shitty Game Boy port that's barely playable. The way I played that game was several years back through a fan translation, and that port that we got here is one, hard to find, and two, not a very good port. It's very ridden with technical issues. So that's the plus side on emulation, and that's where I'm okay with it, is if you can experience games that you cannot purchase or get. It also leads to preservations of games that we could not get for various reasons. This is mostly attributed to arcade games in particular. So let me explain that aspect of it. With arcade games, the tricky part is there are so many arcade games that have not been ported. You know, many for licensing reasons or stuff like that. Fortunately, we are getting a lot of those games back. You know, I, for one, had never thought we would ever see Dungeons & Dragons, the two arcade beat-em-ups by Capcom, ever get released on official capacity like we did last summer. But we did, which is awesome. But there's still a lot of beat-em-ups and things like that. You know, there's some very obscure games. You know, like one I enjoy is Mikey High School Graffiti. There's ports of that on older systems, you know, or older consoles. You know, I believe there's MSX versions, things like that. But nothing on an official capacity that I know of. If I'm wrong, you could correct me. You know, there's stuff like Marvel Land. I know there's a Genesis port, but that's very hard to find as well. And that's the problem. You know, that's the thing. A lot of those games cannot be preserved because they're so old and they've forgotten, and no one gives a shit to either bring them over in any capacity. You can also say the same for a lot of beat-em-ups or games from the 90s. You know, there's two beat-em-ups in particular that have issues that I thought were attributed to the Dungeons and Dragons game. And other games like the Marvel vs. Capcom suffered licensing issues. There's that Punisher beat-em-up from the 90s, and there's also the Alien vs. Predator Capcom beat-em-up. Both very, very, very cool beat-em-ups. The problem is those games are in limbo due to licensing reasons. Perhaps we'll see them. Perhaps something will happen like with Dungeons & Dragons. But that's the thing. So emulation is a tricky issue. I am for it to a very minor degree, as I've described, because it's very important for game preservation. And it's tricky. You know, it's a very, very tricky thing. And I could go on longer on the subject. I can talk about the original version of Donkey Kong or things like that. But here's the deal. It's only two purposes. But if you're emulating games like Super Mario 3, just go fucking buy it. I mean, just buy it. It's not going to kill you. If you really love that game, Super Mario Bros. 3 had just come out again on 3DS and the Wii U, and they were both worth the money. That game is worth, to me, $20. I've been playing it to death lately. I heard me talk about it at one point, but I mean, come on. Come on. You know, emulation has a point, so that's how I feel on the subject. There you go. Not really a rant, but more of a discussion about emulation. What do you guys think? I'd like to see some views on that. You know, challenge my point of view. If you don't, that's cool. You know, I'd like to hear what you guys have to say, and we'll see what Alex has to say about it. So that's my stance on emulation.
It's not so different as it was before, I don't think.
It's not, but I'm a little bit more... It is completely different from when you first met me, because I had a modded PSP with a lot of games that you can buy.
Right.
So, you know, what's really changed is that... It has changed, and I'll explain why. I'm more towards it being for purely fan translations and preservation.
Yeah.
As opposed to just downloading whatever the fuck you want.
Mm-hmm.
So let me give you an example. Another example. Super Metroid. There's no reason you should be emulating that game.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you agree?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because why? Super Metroid is easily able... It's easily accessed, right?
Yeah, but there's also the argument that people don't want to buy the Nintendo platforms just to play, like, an old game. You know, you have to realize also that there's some people who just have pretty much outgrown Nintendo platforms. I mean, that's kind of like my whole, stance right now is that, you know, not only do I not have a Wii U, I do have a Wii, but a Wii U to actually play these games anymore, but, you know, it's like my games, for that matter, are pretty volatile. Like, you know, like what I just said last week, like, or 2 weeks ago, when my system is pretty much, you know, like all the games that I bought, you know, are gone. It doesn't instill too much confidence in consumers to know that they can't take their games that they purchased to whatever they want.
But it goes beyond that, though. It goes beyond Nintendo. Okay?
Right.
I use the Nintendo game as an example. True. And you have a valid, a good point, but I still don't feel that you should be able to play that game. However, I will explain this. This goes beyond Nintendo.
Well, let's get this out of the way. I'm not advocating for illegal use of emulation, which is if there's a copy of it available, you know, like that's commercially available, support the, you know, their decision to actually make it commercial, because it's not gonna cost you a lot. I think why a lot of people go through emulation is because they don't like how companies treat their customers.
Mm.
Nintendo is a big problem when it comes to this because of the easy fact that they're just not competent to be dealing with digital rights management in the current era of convenience, especially in the West.
Okay, but what about Sony games are still emulated. So there you go.
Yes,
you know.
But unlike Nintendo, it is not locked onto a console platform. It is tied to an account. So
right.
You can actually make it portable if you wanted to. So, like, let's say, I don't know, let's say I sold my PS4 for some reason. Later on, if I get another PS4, I just log in with my account, and all of those things will be readily available to me.
Right, I get your point, and I agree. I think Nintendo, I'm not going to say Nintendo's good at handling digital rights or not, okay? But I am still anti-emulation because I think, and it's not just Nintendo games, you know, you can still easily get these games access. And I'm not talking about, you know, there are emulators for pretty much every console now, right?
Sure, yeah.
There's even PS3 emulators from what I understand.
Mm-hmm.
You need a Blu-ray drive and all that shit in your computer, though, unfortunately.
Yeah.
To get that shit working. And a very high-end computer at that. But here's the thing. Emulation... I don't care whatever the reason is, and I'm not saying Nintendo's practices are good because I don't think they are. I do have issues with that company, right? But I don't totally hate them because I still think they put quality products out.
Right.
I still don't think you should be emulating half of these games. And if you look at it, if you really wanted to go pure Super Mario Bros. 3, for example, that game's really not that inexpensive to get, the cartridge, and even an NES. So...
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there are still ways to do that, is what I'm saying.
Right.
And then it goes beyond that. It goes to Sony. Now, let's talk about the positive end of it, is the fan translation community is extremely important, because it goes into the preservation element of these games. A lot of the games that are locked in Japan, we could not have been able to play without emulation.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Now... Let's talk about that Rama game, for example, again, that you were talking about earlier in the show. This is a perfect time to talk about it. Back in those days, I don't think they would. I think I know they did bring a Rama game over officially, though. I believe you are right.
Hard Battle did.
Yeah. Yeah. But other than that, I don't think you would see any other Rama games. Fuck, we never saw any Dragon Ball Z games, if you recall.
Mm-hmm.
Any of those SNES ones, Super Battles or whatever they're called.
Right.
We never saw any of those. You know, there was that Gundam Wing SNES fighter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then there's the RPGs, of course. I mean, there were a bunch of those. You know, there's the two more famous ones, several of the more famous ones that we never got were Seiken Densetsu 3, Tales mm-hmm. of Phantasia, things like that. And then like I said in the rant, we did get a port of Tales of Phantasia, but this, and I'll tell you why I advocate this one. Even though we got a port here, it's a terrible port of that game.
Mm-hmm.
It's the Game Boy Advance port. It's buggy as shit. It's unplayable. I have played it. I own it.
Okay.
It's practically unplayable. The sound quality is horrendous.
Hmm.
It's a really horrendous port of that game.
Horrendous?
horrendous, yes. It's bad. It's a bad port, though. It is not a good port. And it's rare. You know, mm-hmm. it's hard to find anyway, like any Tales games is.
Sure.
But when I play Tales of Phantasia, I played a fan translation of the PlayStation 1 port, which gives you many things that port doesn't have, and it's very playable, and it's a very good port. Now, if they somehow decided, Namco decided, because they are bringing a lot of Tales games. I mean, fuck, we're getting... You heard about the Hearts R announcement, right?
The what announcement?
Hearts R?
No.
Okay, there was a port, and I remember talking to you about this way back in the day. Hearts R is a port of is a remake of the DS Tales of Heart game from the Tales series, right?
Okay.
Okay. It was never brought here. They announced a Vita remake of it, and it came out like a year ago or something. And a lot of people didn't think we were going to get it. Well, the other day, Baba, the guy who's in charge of the Tales series in Japan, announced that we are getting Hearts R.
Hmm.
So, it's cool. So we're getting a lot of Tales stuff now. But they're not going to bring any of the older stuff. Well, they kind of did with Symphonia, but, I mean, we're really never going to get that. So, I mean, with Phantasias, the only way you can really play it is through emulation.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, unfortunate.
Right.
You know, and a lot of the Square games, we didn't get a lot of those old Square games.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like Bahamut Legion or Bahamut Lagoon?
Right.
It's Lagoon. Okay. Or Live a Live, or, you know, Treasure Hunter G, or the original Romancing Saga trilogy. We mm-hmm. didn't get a lot of that stuff here, so.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the only way you could really play that is through emulation, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I support it. And then, like I said in the rant, you know, basically I'm repeating some of the stuff I said in the rant, but preservation of arcade games is important, too.
Mm-hmm.
Even a lot of Western fucking arcade games, you can't find them, can you, Alex?
Yeah.
So, emulation is important for those two reasons, I think.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but, like anything else, it has a flip side.
Yeah.
So, what can you do, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I know how you feel. You feel similar, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I get why people do emulation, especially the illegal stuff, right?
Right.
And it's, like, it's weird how rampant and okay certain people are with regards to that. Like, Ouya, you know, the only reason why a lot of people are actually getting to Ouya is because they can emulate a whole bunch of shit on it. But, you know, if you look at that platform, their fucking controller sucks ass. And you're playing like $100 for that shit? It's crazy. And actually, Android in particular, a lot more so than iOS, is rampant with a bunch of emulation. And I feel like, you know, like, while that's good for certain things, like, I think that, you know, in order for a lot of companies to kind of not get, you know, like, dinged for, you know, by a lot of people because, you know, like, they've been clumsy when it comes to their DRM, like, you know, Nintendo specifically, and I'm targeting specifically Nintendo for this.
Right.
They need to be a lot more lax when it comes to their content. Like, allow people to have multiple versions of their games on multiple platforms, and if not, have the ability to fucking disable them. Because, my God, like, we're living in 2014. This is no longer, like, you know, the previous gen when it started back in for Nintendo, like back in like what, 2007?
Mm-hmm.
It's, or 2006 for that matter. It's not 2006 anymore, Nintendo. We've gone almost a decade with much more refined types of systems, you know, to deal with DRM, and you are still sticking with the same bullshit that you've been using for a long time now. And, you know, if you really want to, you know, get the respect of the people who buy your platforms, you know, or who want to buy your platforms for that matter, but won't, because guess what? If they upgrade to a new platform, they're going to lose their fucking game. You know, you have to give them conveniences. And I think, and I feel that out of the three, because of course, Microsoft has been known to just abandon systems like the 360.
And Microsoft is, they're kind of, their DRM transfers and stuff are a pain in the ass. Yeah. Not as bad as Nintendo, but they're pretty bad about it too.
Yeah.
They're bad.
But Sony's is just so easy. So
fucking
many.
Sony. Yeah. Fuck yeah, dude. Sony is... Dude, Sony... I would say Sony... Here's the three that I think are the best. Sony, Steam, and Good Old Games.
Mm-hmm.
Because...
Well, Good Old Games doesn't even have DRM.
No, fuck no. You buy the game and you could download it on any fucking PC. You mm-hmm. can fucking let someone else access it and you can fucking download your game.
Yeah.
I mean, it's fucking awesome. It is. It's fucking amazing. So, with that said and done, well, with, you know, Good Old Games, Steam is fucking amazing with it, too, and so is Sony.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's very easy to unregister your consoles with mm-hmm. Sony and yeah. register your consoles.
Except for video. I actually, it's funny, because last night I noticed that there were, get this, 7 PlayStation 3s assigned to my devices. I'm like thinking to myself, I don't think I bought that many PlayStation 3s before.
Jesus.
So I deactivated all of them, but there's still one kind of dangling PlayStation 3 that's on there that has like video activation. So I need to be able to move that to my current PlayStation 3. So
gotcha.
I have to call them to do that, unfortunately. So, ugh.
But I mean, you know, with the other companies, it's pretty straightforward. So, mm-hmm.
yeah.
But it goes beyond that, though, too. Like I said, there's a preservation element. There's a lot of games that are lost in limbo
mm-hmm.
due to licensing or other things.
Yeah.
Or, you know, people just don't give a shit and they won't sell.
Yeah.
Like, let's be honest, one of my favorite arcade games, which I mentioned in this rant, is Marvel Land. But, like, if you really support, I guarantee you, no one will buy that fucking game.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like, okay, let's look at something that was released a few years back. The Final Fight, remember? I still play that Final Fight compilation that Capcom released back in 2010.
Sure.
Okay, everyone loves Final Fight, but let's package Magic Sword. You know why they did that? Because no one gives a shit about Magic Sword. I like it, mm-hmm. but it's not going to sell by itself.
Sure.
So that's why certain games, I believe to this day, are not going to get emulation. Mm-hmm. I think one way around it, though, is that one thing that we saw in last gen that we saw definitely dwindle down, and this is something I mentioned earlier in this episode, is compilations.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the advantage of compilations as opposed to releasing games individually. Yeah, Sonic the Hedgehog 2 will sell you somewhat decent, right?
Mm-hmm.
But this game may not. But you can sneak it into a compilation with more popular games.
Right.
So, I mean, that's the beauty of compilations.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a Final Fantasy VI will sell, but not a Live-A-Live. You know, put in the compilation.
Right.
That's just my argument. And that would be one solution to help cut down on emulation, because you're, you know, in that end, as much as I love fan translation, you're kind of, you know, hurting yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's how I look at it. But, again, fan translations and things like that are very good.
Mm-hmm.
And, again, there's a lot of arcade games people just don't give a shit about. And I think games are, you know, in the same way film is. You need to preserve them or a lot of them will be lost.
Right.
You know, because we've lost a lot of films due to poor preservations in its early days, and that's what I fear is going to happen mm-hmm. to some games, so.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I got to say on that.
So, not really along the same lines, very separate. We're kind of moving away from that discussion and stuff. There was a really interesting thing that happened recently with regards to the PlayStation 4 and the Xbox One.
Mm.
So, just recently, Sony announced that they sold 7 million PlayStation 4s to consumers as of April 6th.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. Somebody on NeoGAF, basically a forum I hung out with, compared the previous high-rated, platforms of the past generation and stuff, compared to, like, the same amount of time that it took us to get to April, 6th. And they, the previous consoles, which include the Wii U, the Wii, and whatnot, they only got to about 3 million units sold by April.
Jesus.
To bring context to how crazy the PlayStation 4 is actually selling. On the other hand, Microsoft has said that they've only shipped 5 million Xbox Ones to retailers. So that's not even a count of how many consumers purchased the Xbox One.
Right. Just to clarify something to those that may not know, when you say they shipped something, that doesn't mean they sold it. But when they say they sold it, that means they sold it.
Yeah, when they basically said this is sold to consumers. Now, mind you, these are worldwide numbers. So we know for a fact that, usually Sony does really well in Europe. But for some reason, they're also doing really well in North America as well. Because the NPD numbers came out, and the PlayStation 4, for the third consecutive month, mm-hmm. has outsold the Xbox One. Not a huge margin, mind you, in North America, but fairly significant enough to basically make waves. Mind you, though, that the PlayStation 4 is in more countries.
Oh, yeah.
It's in, I want to say, 22 countries or something like that. Whereas yeah. the Xbox is in less than, about 12 or less or something like that.
You know what you're doing right now? You're making the inner Sony, because I've been a Sony fangirl for so many years. You're making the Sony fangirl and me go, yeah, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's, I was checking out this thread about, Sony telling, it's funny because people were making bets and stuff, some really funny bets saying if it's proven that Sony outsold Microsoft, I will wear a My Little Pony fucking avatar for 3 weeks. And of course they lost their bets, and so you see all these people losing their bets because they were saying Titanfall is coming out in March, it's definitely going to outsell the the PlayStation 4. But even with Titanfall coming out in March, the system did not outsell the PlayStation 4.
You know why? Let me tell you why I think. Since last year, when we saw, let's go back to February 20th, 2013, I think that was the day, when the PlayStation 4 was announced, Sony came in with their guns blazing and they basically said, fuck you guys, the PlayStation is what its namesake is. It's about playing games. It's a PlayStation. You play game on the station, right? But you can do other things, but it's mostly for playing games, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Then you hear the Microsoft Xbox One announcement. Oh, it's an all-media machine. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Here's the thing. What makes consoles unique from other things? You have to make them unique from your Roku boxes or your Apple TVs or even those competing devices. You can't do an all-media machine in this day and age.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what a Roku is for, or that's what an Apple TV is for, or even those new Amazon Kindle boxes are for. Those are all media devices, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You have to make your PlayStation or your Xbox a game console first and foremost. Okay? That's mm-hmm. what Sony did, and they have done since day in, day out.
Mm-hmm.
Since day one of the PlayStation 4, that's been their key. And that's, they've done numerous other things that have helped. But that's the key thing to me, is it's a PlayStation, not an all-media machine.
Mm-hmm.
They've kept the play in the PlayStation, so there you go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, the console wars is far from over. Right?
No, yeah.
But somebody put up a really interesting GIF of what happened in the PlayStation 2 era, where basically like the PlayStation 2 kept on going up and up and up and up and up in sales, whereas all the other platforms just kind of plateaued at like 22 million. That's probably not going to happen with Xbox. I don't think that, that's actually going to happen. But we're already seeing the PlayStation at the very least outpace the Xbox One by 2 million units all over the world. Now, I realize, though, that the Xbox One is not spread all over the place yet. That's going to happen in the fall. But I feel that because Sony has had so much of the mindshare already, and with $100 more on the Xbox One, it's going to be a very difficult sell to somebody, you know, to buy the Xbox One if the PlayStation 4 has a lot more, you know, a lot better memory, faster memory and stuff, and it's 10 times a lot easier to program for the, you know, for the current gen than it was in the previous gen.
Exactly.
You know? So, but who knows? Like, this is still pretty early, you know, speculation and whatnot. It's going to be rather interesting to kind of see what's going to happen within the next few weeks and the next few months. That's why I'm, like, really anxious, you know, to see, you know, like, the newer games that are going to be announced, you know, for later in the fall. And to be honest, like, Dragon Age, you know, Inquisition, I'm only going to get that on the PS4.
Mm.
I know it's available on PS3 and all these other platforms, but PS4 will be the platform I'm going to be getting Dragon Age Inquisition for.
When does that come out?
In the fall.
Okay.
I so hopefully it comes out on all platforms, though, so if you still somehow want to get it for your PS3, you're more than welcome to do so.
Well, I'm probably going to have my PS4 in the fall.
Mm-hmm.
So, because I really, I have to get my Batman.
Yep, this is true.
There you go, so.
This is true. So. Alrighty, well, I think, I mean, we have other things that we can talk about, but, like, I think that pretty much, like, sums up, like, this episode of the Gamer Horizon Social Link podcast, wouldn't you say?
Special deluxe episode.
Special deluxe episode where we talked about a little bit about a lot of the games that I am playing that are more modern that you might be interested in, not some games that you played maybe 20 years ago.
No, you should still play those games.
Yeah, if you have time. You said it yourself, you don't have time for that, for those games, for a lot of games. And you're like, oh man, if you actually listened to my drive-by episode last week, you'll know that it's going to just get more difficult moving forward. So play more modern games. Don't be like Anthony, because he will never, ever get to The Last of Us this
year.
Yeah,
I will get to The Last of Us.
I don't think so.
You don't think so?
I don't think so.
Well, okay. Okay. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to download Tomb Raider
right now.
How about
this? It's going to be Tomb Raider. I bet you, like 10 PlayStation Network points. Or dollars. That you're not going to be able to get through Bioshock Infinite, Last of Us, and Tomb Raider this year. And South Park.
We'll see about that. I can pull
you
it
don't
off.
Want to take the bet because no, it's going to be
do
real.
It. Let's, you know what? Let's do it. Let's do it. Fuck you. I'll take the bet. Take the bet. Okay, fuck you, man. I'll do it. Let's do it. Let's do it. You're on, Alex. You're
all
on.
Right. Okay.
You're on. Okay, let's fucking do it.
That's four games.
Four games. Well, I have the summer, and they're not very long games from what I understand, so it's feasible.
Last of Us is 20 hours. Good luck.
Okay, that's not long. I play 40 hours in 2 weeks of Final Fantasy X. I can do 20 hours
that's
in a week.
That's a game that you played like 10 years ago. I don't count
shit.
That.
What about what about Bravely Default? That wasn't around 10 years ago.
Did
that's
you finish it?
No, but
there you go.
But
yeah,
I got 36
yeah,
hours, which is 16 hours over
still,
The Last of Us.
Did you beat Pokemon Y?
Yes, I did.
Okay, but you didn't beat Bravely Default, so that does not count.
Well,
I'm saying
I beat Zelda.
I will check your trophies at the end of the year to confirm that you beat all these games that I mentioned.
Okay.
And if you guys want to participate in this, email us at sociallinkpodcast@gamerhorizon.com. We will accept, you know, like, suggestions, comments, maybe more dares to Anthony, I think, to kind of stack this up a little bit higher, because I know my games. I have played all those games. That I am current as of 2014. I even have a PlayStation 4.
Ooh, excuse so, the fuck out of me.
So, I mean, I'm just saying, you know, kind of lagging behind for, like, a video game podcaster, so...
There's nothing wrong with that. You gotta have a retro guy.
Retro guy that I can't have conversations about modern games with. Yeah, exciting.
We will. Well, what game did I pre-order, jackass?
Yeah, well, that's Child of Light, but that's like one game. Again, ooh, you're current. You didn't even play Far Cry 3. Oh my god, you are not even current as of 2013.
Don't add. You're not adding Far Cry 3.
You're not adding it.
We'll keep the other four games, but not Far Cry 3.
Oh my gosh. Okay, You will never get to that game.
And
never.
If I did?
Never. You'll never get to that game. You want to add it in addition to all those?
No. Let's do four. Let's do the four. I will go download Tomb Raider right now.
Oh, man. Okay. All right. So, at the very least, can I expect you to at least talk about one of those games by next week?
Yeah.
And I know you kind of started Tomb Raider, so that doesn't count.
Okay.
Because I know you kind of started it, but you never continued it.
I played it. I played a good hour of it last year, but
yeah, there you go. Which is nothing.
Yeah, but I'll download. I'll see what all the hoopla is.
All right. So, that's four games. The Last of Us, Bioshock Infinite...
And?
Tomb Raider. And there was a fourth one. South Park. Yes.
So that'll move me from March 2013 to March of 2014 in the middle of June of 2014.
Pretty much.
Okay, there you go. That's, I guess, 3 months behind.
Oh, geez. You don't even want me to, like, spell out the other ones that you're behind with.
We'll see. At least with Child of Light, I'll be recent, so you can't give me shit on that.
If you beat it, that is the caveat here. If you beat it. I actually beat a game from 2014, thank you.
And that was Stick of Truth.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
You didn't beat Bravely Default, so there's that.
You have a point, but if I beat Bravely Default, then you can't say anything.
I guess not, but you still have to beat the other four games I mentioned.
I will. I have 8 months left. No, 6 months or something. 8 months, yes. I have 8 months left to do it. And I will start with Tomb Raider, and then in 2 months I'll start with Bioshock. Because I have till December of 2014.
Sure.
And then I will beat Batman.
But you also have to procure these games, too, so...
Yeah. Here's the thing. I have Tomb Raider... I have all but two of them. I have half of them. So right. Bioshock Infinite, I did buy release day last year. I bought it digitally.
Mm-hmm.
So I do have it. And then I do have Tomb Raider digitally.
Mm-hmm.
Last of Us, I do not own. Mm-hmm. And I do not own, obviously, Stick of Truth.
Yep. Okay. So you guys heard it. Four games by the end of the year. Keep checking Anthony's trophy list. It's Magus X1.
Yeah, and it's all going to be on PS3, so don't even bother looking me up on Xbox.
Well, I don't know. Maybe you'll get Last of Us on PS4 instead.
Maybe. I don't know if I'm going to wait.
Really?
I don't know. I think I'll just get the motherfucker on PS3. What's the big deal about it on PS4?
It has a DLC. It does contain the DLC that they sold. Separately. Yeah. It also is going to be, like, it's basically Naughty Dog's first PS4 game, because it's not handled by a third-party porting house. It is Naughty Dog that ported this, so it's going to have better shading technology, better frame rate, probably, you know, like, better, you know, because that's one thing that I noticed is a lot of the games on the PS4 that's really cool is that they really do, like, I mean, just that controller is a huge difference. Like, you, it's difficult to go back to the DualShock 3 after being on the DualShock 4. So it really is comfortable. You should at the very least, if you're not going to buy a PS4, you should put your hands around one by next episode.
Okay, I'll go to the store and do that.
Yeah, and actually, like, play, like, a game, like a full-on demo and stuff, and, you know, let me know how it feels. Because I'm curious what you think of that controller.
The DualShock 4.
Yeah.
Well, here you said it, folks. It is now April 20th, 2012 for me and April 20th, 2014 for Alex. So...
It shouldn't be any different.
But... I know, I'm just joking.
Yeah. All right. So, that said, remember, email us at sociallinkpodcast@gamehorizon.com. Thank you for staying with us for this long 2-hour podcast. And we'll definitely see you guys next time. So until then, happy gaming, and we'll see you online.